It's now my pleasure to introduce you to Carlos.
My name is Carlos. Thanks for inviting me to speak up here, Bill and Ginger, and thanks for allowing me to be of service today. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. That was a huge tool for me in my early years in recovery. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a crazy alcoholic, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon as well. Alcoholics Anonymous helped me to control that craving and to not go back to drinking, because I remember going to one of my first meetings and thinking at the meeting, well, this is not for me. I'm going to the store and I'm going to give me a tall can. But I was wrong. So it wasn't working for me right at the beginning. I continued to go. My problems were so huge that I couldn't control that. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go for help. But I did come back. I heard somebody say, don't come back, just stay. And I decided to stay. My life did not become manageable just by coming back. It took a lot of work. It took a few years. Even after a few years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was still pretty insane. I wasn't snapping. I was exploding. I wasn't in contact with my emotions. Like I heard some other people share. You know, I was in contact with everyone and everything around me, but I wasn't in contact with myself. I heard somebody say that this and this are not connecting. Well, that's exactly where I used to be. I got sober. I needed sobriety. I did not know how to get it. I had a sponsor, and it wasn't happening. And nothing at home was changing. The disease was deeply penetrated inside my home. It was attacking me severely, my wife, my kids. One day after a couple years in program, I walked out of the bedroom and I noticed that both of my kids were terrified in the corner of the house. So that day, I went inside. I was already at the mercy of my higher power. So that day I went into my office and I asked him, I said, hey, help me. And I went on my computer and I've had heard of Al-Anon in the past. So I just clicked in Al-Anon and it gave me a listing of a meeting that day that started within an hour and a half. So to me, that was the next indicated thing for me to do that day, because that's what my higher power was telling me. So I went. I went to the Al-Anon meeting, and I don't know who was there. I don't know what was going on. I wasn't able to hear anything, but I knew my higher power wanted me there. So after a few months, or maybe even a few years of trying to apply both programs to my life, things started happening. There was a little miracle going on. I started feeling okay. But when I started getting sobriety, I didn't realize sobriety was happening, and a lot of different emotions. I was back in contact with my emotions. I was in contact with my feelings, and that took me to some of the roots of my problems. And I was, at that time, I was still looking for the answer in blaming, and you did this, they did that, this happened this. One of my main problems was law enforcement and the Department of Corrections. But then I, you know, after a while, I just said, hey, you know, I can't keep blaming these guys because they don't talk back, they don't care, they don't call me. I gotta do something else. So I started looking at what happened to Carlos. I was able to identify to everything that Albert was saying about his upgrowing. I had both parents in the house. They were there physically, but they were not there for me emotionally, mentally. I mean, they were caught up in their disease. My dad is an alcoholic, even though he doesn't know it. And my mom was just caught up by the alcoholism, so I didn't have a good home base. At a very young age, I discovered the process of what Eric was talking about earlier, getting that bag and turning that bag into more bags and being very profitable. And when I was growing up, I was into drugs, but I wasn't into using them or drinking them. I wasn't selling them. It wasn't until I became an adult that I started experiencing with alcohol, because if I wanted to continue a relationship with my family, that's all they wanted to do. And I had to be part of that. I loved them and I wanted to be around them. I didn't like it, but it was the only thing they wanted to do, so I gave in. Next thing you know, I became an alcoholic without knowing it. I got caught up in my profession, which was selling drugs. Ended up at Salinas Valley State Prison. I don't like prison politics. So what I did, instead of hanging out with the rest of the guys that I had to hang out with, I decided to go to AA, NA, Bible study, art class, anything to get away from the politics. And I remember learning the program there, learning the steps, learning the principles. At the time, I wasn't aware that I had a problem with my drinking. I didn't know I had a problem with selling drugs. I thought selling drugs was okay. But I found out that it doesn't matter what you're doing around alcohol or drugs or anything, as long as you're around them or around people who are using them, they're going to ruin your life too. So I was aware of that. So I started working on a program for me. This is back in 97. So I get out with the program, and I had this whole plan of what to do. But the minute I got out, I went back to my family. And unfortunately, the family on my side and my wife's family, it's like we're all the same family. We're all identical. We all it's the same family regardless of which family I choose to hang out with. Today I don't look at just people that are drug addicts or alcoholics or differently than people that are caught up by the disease. Because it doesn't, in my opinion, it doesn't really matter whether you're using or not. If you're affected by the disease, you're affected and you're going to act the same. So I point that out because for me today, if I continue to hang out around that environment, I'm going to continue to be the same person I used to be. So today I need to be at places that are good for Carlos. Healthy places, places where I can grow, places where I can continue my sobriety, my serenity, my recovery, and that's what I'm trying to do today. So continue to take inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. Like I was saying earlier, that used to be one of my tools in my early years, because I wasn't only trying to stay sober, I was trying not to be the same person I used to be. And when I would say or do something to someone, it wasn't easy. I would have to force myself to come back and say, hey, you know what? I just said that, and now I feel like crap. I'm sorry for saying that. because that's not what I want to do. And I remember the hardest person to say that to was my wife. And it was her, because I remember before I started my recovery, I was in her eyes, I was an alcoholic. You're already starting. You have a problem. You're an alcoholic. Your families are alcoholics. All you guys do is F and drink. Drinking was a huge problem for her. And when I stopped, she didn't know me anymore. She couldn't identify with me anymore. I wasn't the same person. I wasn't the same person that she was used to. So she started telling me things like, I don't know why you stopped. Why you stopped drinking? You never had a problem. You know, it's okay if you go and have another beer. It's okay. You could just have one. Because when I took on my recovery, I took it on. I really applied it to my life, and I knew that hanging out at places where there's 30 packs of beer full on the ground and a 30 pack of empty cans on the table, I knew that wasn't for me anymore. And most importantly, it wasn't for my kids. I didn't want my kids to think what I thought, because when I was growing up, that's what I was used to. I was used to just, you know, watching people fight, start having a good time, start arguing, start fighting, start shooting, you know, just start treating everybody like crap. And drinking was okay. It was okay not to have milk, but it's okay to have a 12-pack in there. And that's exactly what the environment that I did not want for my kids anymore. And it became a problem, because if I was going to apply program to my life, that didn't fit with our family's program. That didn't fit with their lifestyle. They couldn't come over with the 12-pack because I would feel uncomfortable. And it didn't become a problem until I had to confront some family members about that. I said, hey, you know what? That's cool that you guys want to do that, but I would feel a lot more better if you went and did it somewhere else. And I was able to do that with my family for my recovery, for my sobriety, for my serenity. But my wife wasn't able to do it with hers, so that became a problem. But, you know, I could only worry about myself, and I'm only able to do what I need to do for me. I can't worry about anybody else. Unfortunately, I can't even worry about my wife today, because she needs to do whatever she wants. But that's where I practice, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. When I first started my recovery, I knew I needed a sponsor. I knew I needed to work with someone. And one day I'm out in Nevada. I was out there working, and before I went, I had a list of AA meetings and Al-Anon meetings, and they had this beautiful place out there. I was in Reno, Nevada. They had this beautiful place out there called the Triangle. And they have AA, NA, Al-Anon, Alateen, you name it. I'm bilingual, so I can go to AA in Spanish. I can go to AA in English, and the same with Al-Anon or NA meetings. So I went out there, and I met this one guy, and he was just sharing. And after the meeting, I really enjoyed what he had to say. And after the meeting, I just went up to him to say hi. And before I opened my mouth, he told me, before you say anything, this is all I got to say. Get your ass to a meeting. Don't talk to me unless you've been in a meeting for 6 months. You better get your ass to an Al-Anon meeting too, because if you have problems with alcoholism, your emotions are all fucked up. So before you even talk to me again, you need to do that. I just wanted to say hi, and he thought I was coming up to him for sponsorship. So that kind of stuck with me, you know, when he told me, get your ass to a meeting and don't fucking talk to me till you've been in the program for at least 6 months. that stayed with me. And then I said, hey, you know, I just enjoyed your share, and I just wanted to say hi. He goes, oh, okay, right on. So it, you know, he was just telling me, he goes, you know what, you kind of look like you were looking for a sponsor. I'm the only guy in there. You know, that's what I thought. That's why I thought you were asking me to be your sponsor. And I said, you know what, I really like what you said, and I, you know, it would be nice if you were my sponsor. He goes, well, like I said, get your ass to a meeting. Don't fucking call me unless you've been in the program for at least 6 months. And then I shared with him that I had been in the program for a while. But the thing about him was that he was being honest. And the thing about me was that I was being honest in receiving his message. And I didn't call him in 6 months. I called him back in 2 months. I called him back with questions that I thought were, that he would understand. And I continued the relationship over the phone, but I don't really like to call people. The only person that I call a day is my higher power. But whenever I am going through some turmoil, or when somebody else's actions force me to make a decision, I do get into a rage sometimes. But he really guided me through. He shared with me his experience with the steps, and I applied his experience. I applied what I want, what I needed, and I left the rest. But that's how I did it. And today, when people ask me for help with the staff, with any situation, I just give them my experience, and I always advise everyone, the best way to do it is inside your heart and your head. And I always share my experience on what has worked for me. And sometimes I share a little bit of what hasn't worked for me. But everybody's different. Everybody's different. Everybody's going to apply the program to themselves or their lives in their way. Today my biggest tool is the full serenity prayer. It talks about I'm gonna have to say it so that I could know what I'm talking about. It's God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, taking as He did this sinful world and not as I would have it, trusting that He will make all things right if I surrender to His will. See, when I go to the... Well, that's not... Let me finish it. If I surrender to His will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy forever with Him in the next. When I go the full length of the serenity prayer, that's I'm asking Him for guidance. I'm asking Him for wisdom. But it also talks about surrendering. And today, I think in different stages of my recovery, today that's where I'm at. I'm surrendering. And in the beginning, I knew that I had to surrender because I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. And that my life had become unmanageable. So when I admit that to Him, I'm surrendering in a way. Today I understand that I'm surrendering, but in the beginning I was just saying that. But I would get back up. When I would surrender, I would get back up, you know. And then one day I was still going through some insanity, the thought came to me, well, He sent me a message saying, if I put you on your knees, that's where you belong. So that kind of stayed with me. So today, when I surrender in the morning, every day I tell Him, hey, you know, it's whatever you want, and it's whatever you decide. And then I go to, I'm seeking through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with You and the power to carry that out. And when I say that, I feel that He's in charge. And when I start feeling confused, or when I start obsessing or trying to control, or my codependency kicks in, I go to Him right away. So whenever that happens, I just go to him right away and I say, I can't. You can. I'm going to let you. And then I find the nearest mirror. Because when I find that mirror, I look at the person at fault for all my character defects, which is me. So when I look at myself, I look at myself and I say, okay, why are you feeling like that? I'm taking my personal inventory. I'm digging within. I'm looking within. And then I admit to him, okay, this is why I'm doing that. And then I'm ready for him to remove whatever's going on inside my head. And then I have to get back down on my knees and say, hey, please remove my character defects, my shortcomings. And if it has to do with person, place, or thing, I make my list. And then if I have to make that call, I'll make that call. But then I come back to step 10, make direct amends, and when we were wrong, probably admitted it. But that's been my experience with the steps. The steps are keeping me from committing suicide, and the traditions are helping me from committing a homicide. And that's been my experience with the steps. I have to live them. I have to apply them to my life, the steps and the traditions, every day, or else I can't function. I can't function. I have to be in an Al-Anon meeting. I have to be in an AA meeting. I like to be at the meetings where I see a lot of court cards flying, because that reminds me of where I come from and what's going to happen to me if I go back to that. It really dawned on me when the guy that had to leave was talking about, you know, I don't know how to stop getting that bag and selling. I remember feeling like that in 97 and 98, and I remember getting that bag, and I remember feeling guilty. I was feeling guilty because I went back to selling drugs, but I was feeling good because I made a lot of money. But there was a conscience. There was a conscience and a conviction inside me already that I was feeling bad. I remember it took a spiritual awakening for me to realize that I had a problem with that, with alcohol, and with myself. The first time somebody mentioned that a tiny bit of my issues or problems could be rooted from my drinking, I thought that person was crazy. 2 years later, the same person told me the same thing, and at that time I think I was ready, and I told my higher power, hey, you know, you've been talking about this for a while. I think it's time to do something about it. And he didn't give me an answer, and he gave me a thought. You need to do something about it. So I did. I went to a meeting. And like I said, it didn't happen in a day. It didn't happen in a month. It didn't happen in a year. But I didn't have nowhere else to go. Anywhere else that I went, I knew where that took me already. So like I said earlier, thanks for letting me be of service. When I surrender to my higher power, and my higher power asks me to do something, I don't question it. I just do it. And thanks for letting me be of service again.
All right. Thank you, Carlos. And this actually leads us to one of my favorite parts of this whole thing is our question and answer period. I do have questions that were put in the basket. If you have any others, please feel free to fill them out, and you can bring them to me up here on stage as we're going through this. But what we're going to do now is go ahead and present some questions. And let's see here. Start here. Okay, so the first question is, what does the fourth step really consist of? I thought it was telling all your dark secrets, but someone told me that's not true. So I realize we're putting you on the spot because we've been talking about 10, but 4 and 10 seem to be kind of connected, and maybe you can offer your opinions on it. Or experience.
15 is, it's kind of like a recap of step four. In my experience with step four, I never stopped with the steps. My personal agenda is every year I start, you know, with, in January I start with first step, and then, you know, I continue with second step and all that. But sometimes I fall a little behind, and like it'll be September and I'm still on step three. But I never stop. If today I'm in step three, I'm going to go to step three until I'm done, then I'll go to step four. And every time I go to it, something different comes up. Working step one, two, and three brings up a lot of, in my personal experience, a lot of crap that I can apply to my fourth step. I've never really been afraid of step four, but if this question, I'm not sure if the question was in regards to the first time you work on it, you're just supposed to just be honest, and with honesty, your higher power is going to give you the message that you need from it, and it's gonna bring out whatever needs to come out.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Carol, do you have any? So again, the question is, what does the fourth step really consist of? I thought it was telling all your dark secrets, but someone told me that's not true.
I think that what I was taught was the fourth step is an inventory of our birth or handicap. And I really like the description at the end of chapter 5. It says that after we've done the fourth step and confided in another person, that we swallowed and digested some chunks of truth about ourselves. And it's kind of just a basic template of what I'm going to work with to move forward in 6 through 12. And for me, the 10-step progress inventory, or at the end of the year, is kind of another fourth step. For me, the fourth step consisted of four columns. Today, my favorite column is the fourth column. It wasn't when I first did it, because I got to see how I could change, and by working, also talking to somebody else and having her hear these horrid things that I was never going to tell anybody, and then realizing that she had done them too, that was part of the fourth step for me. It got me to see that I was an alcoholic among alcoholics, and I wasn't so unique anymore. And it also helped me to see the fourth step, like when something similar happens today, I still have my first fourth step and my second, third, and fourth step, and I can look back at them and I can see a similar, like a pattern developing. And so the fourth step to me was a way to discover the patterns of how I act, what I think, and offer me a new solution. And step 10, I guess to compare it, is a daily one. That's how I work it personally. So that's it.
What is the fourth step?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Pretty much. The fourth step is, I would say, to my fondue, that the fourth step is the step we use to get rid of the snapper. And the tenth step is the step we use to make sure he doesn't return. Okay. The fourth step is a personal inventory of our books of handicaps. As Carol was describing, and I get it right from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I get a resentment, it's the most dangerous thing that can happen to me. And I tell you, there's a story in the back of the Big Book that deals with dealing with a very strong burned resentment. I had one of those at one time. Before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And that resentment was driving me crazy. And I mean crazy. Straight up lunatic crazy. Ready to have a complete breakdown. I was 18 years old. I was in the United States Marine Corps. I was sitting in a barracks at Camp Pendleton. and I was sitting on my bunk, and I was coming unglued over this resentment I had towards a stepfather who had abused me as a child, abused my two sisters and my brother as a child, and I hated him, and I was absolutely torn up inside with him, and I was coming unglued. And this guy showed up out of nowhere and looked at me. Like, I'm looking at you out here in the audience today, and he told me, what's going on? And I looked at him and said, nothing. He said, no, I can tell. Something's going on. You're in a bad space, and you need help now. Tell me about it. And I sat there and thought about it. This solution is right here in the big book. I didn't know it until I came in AA. It's directly reflective of what the four steps is all about. So I told him about my feelings I was having about my stepfather. And he told me to sit down and to get a tablet and get a pen. So I did. He said, now on the tablet I want you to, now this is honest to that story, he said, I want you to write down everything you hate about him. I want you to write a letter to him, tell him everything you hate about him, everything he did that makes you mad, everything he did that hurts your feelings, that's got you feeling the way you feel today. Write it all down on that tablet right now. And I started writing. And I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote. And I cried, tears fell on the paper. And when I got it done, he said, take an envelope, address it to him, hold that note up, put it in the envelope. So I did. He said, now tear it up and throw it in the trash can. Like, what? Tear it up and throw it in the trash can. So I did. In the trash. He said, now get your tablet and pen. I said, why? He said, now you're going to write to him again. And you're going to tell him everything he did that you appreciate. Everything he did that you respect. That you're grateful for and that he did for you as you were growing up. To start writing. So I wrote that letter. And I had to write this guy and tell him that I loved him for teaching me to be respectful. Teaching me to be responsible. Teaching me to get a job when I was young and earn my own money. Teaching me to say yes ma'am and no ma'am and yes sir and no sir. Teaching me things that were important. And I found that there was a whole list of things that I could actually tell this guy I was thankful for and I loved him for. He said, now I want you to address an envelope to him. Put it in the envelope and mail it off. And he took me to the post office and we mailed that envelope. And I don't know why, but I felt better. And I left there feeling okay. All that resentment and anger was gone. And a week later, my stepfather showed up at Pendleton. Took me to dinner. Started a relationship that we had never had in all the years I was growing up. The purpose of the fourth step is to get rid of the resentments that have killed us as alcoholics and addicts. The big book says resentments is the number one offender. What we do with the fourth step is find out what it is in us that makes us resentful and how we react to it and what we can do to change us so we don't react that way no more. So we can live peaceful and happy in recovery. That's what I learned from my sponsor.
Hey, do I need a microphone now? I'll just go home. All right. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that the alcohol was just a symptom of the disease. It said many of us had problems way before we ever started drinking. I've been doing time since I was a kid. I didn't start drinking until later. I was already getting in trouble. You see what I mean? So when I had to read this right here, you see, I had to take a look at this. It wasn't me. It's who I became. But it wasn't even about who I become. It was about how I got to where I was at. See, and right here, one of the things that I love about this book right here, man, is that it breaks it down. And this is what Carol was talking about. It breaks it down right here to the three of the four columns that she referred to. In the book, it talks about it. Now, if you go to meetings, you hear people talk about people, places, things, people, places, things. It doesn't say that. It says people, principles, and institutions. People, you see, that have wronged me. Or so I felt or thought. You see what I mean? And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay, what this fourth step does is that it sets me up for my fifth step. That's exactly what it does. And I didn't want to do this inventory. They told me, if you don't do your fourth, I guarantee you're going to drink a fifth. You know what I mean? So I had to really take a look at this. And I had to look at, and they had me write a list. Before I even started on this, I had to write a list of all the people, man, that I was resentful at. And like Maytag said, man, it's a dubious luxury that alcoholics like me cannot afford to have. And I had to write a list of all the people, man, that in my mind and in my heart wronged me. I wasn't going to be happy until I wronged them back. You know what I mean? And I had to look at the principles. And I had to look at the institution. I didn't like school, man. I hated school. I didn't like school because I always thought I was stupid. I never knew that there's different ways to learn. But because I'd read something, forgot what I'd read, and then when the teacher would call on me, I didn't want to raise my hand. And I would get rebellious. I hated school. That was an institution. I hated CYA. I hated juvenile hall. I hated jail. And I hated prison. Because I hated the person that he created in me, the things that I had to do to survive those environments. I hated violence. And I became one of the most violent people I ever knew. You see, and those are the principles and institutions. But I also had to look at this. I was able to look at all my resentments. I had to go to the people on that list. I had to go to the institutions and environments. You know what was an institution to me? Court. Even when I got sober. If I got a traffic ticket, hey man, I pulled you over because your taillight's out. See, I was scared of court. All I had to do was get it fixed, change the light bulb or the fuse, get it signed off, go to court, boom. Weedy weedy with the judge and I'm out of there, right? No, man, I wouldn't go to court on a stupid traffic ticket because I was afraid some old warrant's going to come out and haunt me. I'm going to, oh, by the way, we found this old warrant on there. You know what I mean? So to me, even the courthouse was an institution. Okay? I was able to look at it, and I had to put down all my resentments. I had to write a list of the resentments, the people, the institutions, and the principles like the book lines up. And I had to look at the cause. This is why. And I understood that, and that was easy, man. Oh, that arrogant mother, how could they do this to me? You know what I mean? But you know what helped me the most out of the fourth step? Was I had to look at how it affected my self-esteem, my self-worth, my fears, my feelings of inadequacy. And by doing that, it helped me to look at how I became that mean, ugly, malicious, vindictive person that I was. Because my whole life, I realized I've been scared. But I'd never show it, and I wouldn't admit it. You see what I mean? I have to take that inventory, and I have to look at all those things that I'm not blaming, but played a part in how I became this person that I created. I created this person, and I built this wall around me so that you couldn't hurt me. Because if you did, then you forced me to hurt you back first. And that's what I didn't want to do. So by taking this fourth step, by learning about, you know, the resentment, but the cause, and that was easy. The hard part was talking about how it affected my self-esteem, my security, my trust issues. Now I understand why. That's why I wouldn't go to anyone for help, because I was afraid of rejection. That's why I wouldn't admit that I was scared, because I'd be labeled as a punk. You see, that's why I wouldn't do these things. I would have never knew that if they hadn't broke it down for me, man, and said, it's not who you are, it's who you become, and you need to look at how you become that way. And then setting myself up for that fifth step, I was able to share that with my God, my sponsor, which was the other human being, the exact nature of my wrongs, that false pride, one of the seven deadly sins, that lust, another one of my seven deadly sins, you know, the wrath. You're going to feel, if you hurt me, I'm going to make you feel it. Another one of the seven deadly sins. It set me up so that I can look at me and how I became the way I was and have an understanding that I'm not a bad person. I'm just a scared person. I'm not a bad person. But I've done some bad things because of that fear. And I had to acknowledge that this is what's driving me, man. This is what's driving me to get violent. This is what's driving me to get drunk. This is what's driving me to not believe in myself. And I think that four step is the one that really set it up. And that 10 step, I mean, that's how they connect, man. I just got to go back sometimes and look at that again. One more time. The truth is, I'm scared. One more time, like with Bill today, the truth is, I can be irresponsible, 23 years sober. Totally forget about today, man. You see, one more time, I got to remember. That four step broke it down and taught me. This is why I do the things I do. This is what drives me, man.
Okay. Thank you, sir. All right,
our next question is sort of a long one here. It says, what guidance or assignment do you offer your sponsees as they move from step 9 to step 10? So is the sponsee to conduct the spot and or daily inventories alone, or do you as a sponsor play a role? And what do you do as a sponsor to guide someone through the 10 step?
I don't need that, huh? Okay.
Recording.
There's a couple of things that I do when I work with people. All right? The most important thing to me is that third step prayer. That God, I offer myself to thee to do with me as thou will. You know what I mean? And I have to have everybody that I sponsor memorize that. Because that's an important part. Because I can fall into my will and forget all about my will. And when I do that 9 step and that 10 step, you see, I got to remember that these people are just like me. These people are, everybody that's in recovery, man, is like me. They think that they're bad people. And they're not bad people. They're just scared, they're just lost, they're just like I was, man. You know what I mean? And these people need to be reminded that, look at, this is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm going through. And this is what I need to talk about, because this is what's bothering me. I need to be reminded. I need to be reminded, man, of who I am. And I need to be reminded of who I thought I was. I don't want to go back to that person. I'm going to have to do these steps. I'm going to have to do them. And when I work with people and we're going through the steps, that's important. And just letting them know that it's okay to be honest. You can be honest. I understand you're going to be afraid. I understand there's some things that you're going to be embarrassed and not want to talk about. But those are the things that if I don't talk about are going to keep me safe. Those are the things that if I keep inside of me, like Maytag was saying, it's going to build up, and then it's going to catch up to me anyway. It's called the inevitable. There's a reason why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. And there's a reason why I'm starting to think the way I'm thinking. And I have to remember that things are not always, I don't always see things as they are. I have a bad habit of seeing things the way I are. You know, and I got to remember, I'm scanning. Sometimes I'll think, man, that dude's scandalous. But it's not that dude, it's me. You know, I see things through my eyes. And my eyes see things the way I am. And things are not always the way I am. I gotta remember, man, that you're the way you are and I'm the way I am. I have to remember that. And that's what helps me with setting up that 9 step for the 10th. Because when I'm taking that inventory, again, I couldn't emphasize enough. Yeah, this person said that. Yeah, this person did that. It angered me, it upset me, it offended me, it scared me. I felt disrespected. But one more time, it's got to go back to that. Why am I allowing this person or that situation to have that much power over me? Because it ain't about that or that. It always comes back to me.
The question was how do we go about the transition from the ninth step to the tenth step with our sponsees, do we play a part in it? And my answer to that was kind of covered already in my talk about the tenth step. My sponsor always played a part in my tenth step and still does. In actuality, when I start working with a person, whether I point it out to him right away or not, he starts partially doing the tenth step right from the beginning in the daily inventory, because I require all my sponsees to keep themselves in check, watch themselves, and if they start to get a resentment, or if they get a resentment and they're angry about something, they need to call me right away and discuss it with me. That's the first phase of the tenth step. I'm not actually starting him on the tenth step, but he's working part of it right from the beginning. And I play an active role with all my sponsees in that, because that's what my sponsor did for me. When they complete the ninth step and we transition into the tenth step, then I require them to, I shouldn't say require. I basically open the door for them to start calling me on a daily basis to do the daily inventory of the tenth step that they were supposed to be working all day long, and talk about at the end of the day what resentments they ran into and what went on with it and where they're at with it and where they're going. That's what my sponsors did. And I'll be honest with you, I gotta tell Albert, let him off the hook here a little bit with this bill thing and apologizing. See, I didn't remember about today either. I don't think Bill really needs, or Albert really needs to give Bill an apology. As in the tenth step, it's more of a thank you, because the reason I'm here this morning is because Bill called me with one of them messages. And all of you need to know, if you got anything out of anything the two of us shared today, you don't need to thank us, you need to thank Bill, because if he hadn't have been doing his job, we wouldn't be here.
Thank you.
That's part of my 10-step work right there. I owe great gratitude to Bill for me being here today. And it's not because I hadn't been thinking about it or forgot about it. I'm a truck driver. I get real busy and I get phone calls and things change and my priorities get switched on me on a moment's notice. I got called yesterday afternoon to tell me I was leaving tomorrow morning to be in Portland or Medford, Oregon on Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Well, I don't have a Saturday and Sunday weekend. I just have a Saturday weekend. So I forgot all about Bill and started planning golf. That's why there's golf clubs sitting in my truck outside. And if I hadn't got a phone call from Bill, I'd be over there instead of here.
Please use the mic. This is trying to record.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My experience has been that I definitely do play a role in my sponsees in transitioning from the ninth to the tenth. And I meet with my sponsees once a week, and usually at that time we get to go over what's been going on throughout the week. And I'm always available by telephone, and I love to hear from them because they help me to grow. And you know, usually the things that they're going through parallel at some point with what I'm going through too. And it's just, they help me, I think, more than they know. And they give me a chance to just be quiet and listen. And I just welcome their phone calls. And I'm glad I get to trudge the road of happiness, destiny with them.
So what guidance or assignment do you offer your sponsees as they move from step 9 to step 10? Is the sponsee to conduct a squat or daily inventories alone, or do you play a role? And what do you do as a sponsor to guide someone through step 10?
It's been my experience. In any step that I'm working on, I share what's worked for me. I'm always open, I'm always available. It all depends on the person that I'm working with. Some people call me all the time, some people call me once in a while, some people don't call me too much.
I'm always looking for problems, not perfection in any situation. And what I always say is, don't call me about a situation. Call me about a step. And I always say, I don't care what step you're on. As long as you're on a step, that's fine. And when it comes to those steps, we normally try to work together on the steps. But some people, it works different with different people. Some people call me all the time, like I said, and some people don't really call me at all. But at the end of the day, it's however you apply the steps to yourself, whatever works for you, whatever you feel most comfortable with. What works for me doesn't work for somebody else, and what's working for them doesn't work for me sometimes. And just as long as I make sure that we're in contact, sometimes I am available, sometimes I'm not. And like Carol said, it doesn't matter who's going through the crisis at the time. In my experience, if someone's going through a crisis, and for the simple fact that we're sharing about their crisis or trying to work through the crisis together, I don't know, in my personal opinion, I think I benefit the most, because as long as I'm working on something productive, I gain a lot of power and strength. All right, thank you. So, you know, it's kind of funny. This is the sixth workshop that we've done here at the 210 Center. And the first workshop we had, one of our panelists called from Las Vegas to tell me that he forgot. And the other one texted me at like 5 in the morning, and I didn't see the text until like 9:15 that she had come up ill. And so when I became aware that half of the panel wasn't here and I had 15 minutes before we started, I kind of panicked. And as it would happen, there were two people who just happened to show up that day who were wonderful panelists. And I'd like to tell you that since then, I've learned to trust God that no matter what comes up, it's going to be taken care of. But last month when we did this, I had somebody cancel on Thursday, and it sent me through the freaking roof. I was really upset because I felt that this person wasn't being responsible, and I felt they put me on the spot, and yada, yada, yada. I'm working through that resentment. I actually hugged that person for the first time in a month yesterday, so... So I'm making progress. But you know, the funny thing is this workshop has been a reaffirmation to me that God does always show up. And it's not up to me to do His work. I'm supposed to do my work, but sometimes I get confused and think that some of the things He does are supposed to be mine, and so I get confused. And it's funny, this morning I was reluctant. One of our panelists was sick today, and then I started thinking, you know, I hadn't seen Jack all week, and I was supposed to see him this week, and I thought, you know, but Jack, man, he shows up. When he says he's going to be there, man, he's going to be there, and I don't have any reason to doubt it, but that doubt sneaked its way in, and I made a phone call, and I left a message for him, and I said, hey, forgive me for doing this, but I just want to make sure to remind you. And I felt like, oh, I don't need to call Jack. Now he tells me the truth. And I was feeling so bad about calling Jack and doubting Jack that I didn't dare call Albert. It's funny the way God shows up. Okay, so next question. It has been said that the steps should be done in order. Is it worthwhile to do a daily step 10 before you finish the first 9, or should one wait? In my experience, the best method that worked for me is doing them in order. Like I shared earlier, with any crisis, I start. I'm gonna let you, and then I go.
find that mirror and I look at myself, it would be a little awkward for me to just look at myself, because without that surrendering, without that decision of turning it over to Him, and I don't think it would work for me. But that's just, like I said, all I can give you is my experience. I think for me, if I wouldn't have done them in order, I don't think they would have worked as well. But sometimes I do go to step 10 when I see it applicable. If I did something wrong or said something wrong, I say, hey, you know, I'm sorry for doing that. That's not what I wanted to say. And then step 10 is a very great tool for me, because I have my old ways keep coming back, so I have to really keep my eyes and my ears open, because a lot of things that come out of my mouth are just not good, and especially to those people I love, everything that comes out of my mouth at times can be a weapon. So yeah, I have to go back and do it in order. But sometimes I do. I just look at myself and then jump step to step. But that's just temporarily. But when there's a crisis, I definitely have to do it in order. Thanks.
That's a really good question. I believe that the steps should be worked in order. They're put in order, and I don't mess around with that. When I was new, my sponsor had to make a gratitude list, and that was kind of the precursor for doing a test, because I got to tell her what I was grateful for that day. And I called my sponsor every day when I was new, and whenever I came up with something that bothered me, she would say, remember that notebook I gave you? I want you to write it in that notebook. And I didn't know it, but we were starting really my fourth step, even though I was on 1, 2, and 3. And when I got to the fourth step, I was like, oh yeah, those things are already there. She also had me keep a notepad on my nightstand, so those times when I couldn't sleep because I was worried about something or how something was going to affect me, I could write it down, and it allowed me to sleep that night. And I feel that was kind of building up into my inventory also, and eventually into my 10th step. But I definitely think they're worked in order for a reason, and I don't have to know why all the time. And I think that's all I have.
Okay, again, when I work with my sponsees, the first part of the 10th step is something I require them to do right from the start. It's not by the big book. I believe in working the steps in order, 1 through 12. I really do. But the first part of the 10th step is not working a step. But it is protecting others from me. It really is, and I'll tell you why. And I share this with my sponsees. I already told you about that kid that went on the date. It did the 2 meetings and left me not doing none. And I got resentful, and I didn't have a sponsor at that time. And I was upset, and I carried it into the next corner, and I went into staff and told on him. And they called him in and confronted on it. Now, I was 34, and he was 17. And they pulled the covers on him for doing that. And they offered him some restriction and a couple other things for doing what he did, and he didn't like it, so he left the recovery home. And a week later, he was in the newspaper, him and two guys drinking in a car, wrecked it and rolled it, and all three got it. And I tell my sponsees that when I hold a resentment in and react on it, bad things happen. Spot check inventory is to protect me from myself and to protect you from me. And we start that right away, so that if you get a resentment, you have an opening to work it out rather than to hold it in and do more harm to yourself and others. The rest of the 10th bit passed away because you got enough to do with the first 9. But the spot check inventory starts right away. If you don't have a sponsor, you can't keep doing it. But if you got a sponsor, when I got a sponsor, we do the spot check inventory daily. That's just the way it is.
There's two ways to answer that question. For a person that's never gone through the steps and it's your first time going through them, well, obviously you're not going to know anything about the 10th until you've done your 9th. Okay? However, having said that, okay, when you've gone through the steps and you've had that spiritual awakening as a result of, everybody, even myself, knows that on a daily basis I'm going to have to take an inventory. If I catch myself, you know, just for whatever reason, yeah, it's important that on a daily basis, for whatever reason, okay, that I stop for a moment, reflect, and look. And it's not talking about at the end of the day. It's not saying before I crash out, you know what I mean, to look back at my day also, but it's also saying even throughout the day. I could get myself getting frustrated at work. You know, I could be having a nice day and something's going to go wrong, or at least in my mind it will. And that's what Jack was talking about earlier, those shortcomings. When those shortcomings come up, man, yeah, I need to take an inventory. Yeah, I need to take a look at that. You know? I think that's a pretty simple question right there. It's a good question. It's a pretty simple answer. You're not going to know anything about the 10th if you're new. You haven't even got there yet. Because like all three of them just said, the steps are set up in order for a reason. And when I get to that step, I'll do it. But he said, I'm never going to finish doing these steps. I'm always going to do them. You see, I'm not always going to do them in the order that they should be. Because I know when something's wrong, what step I need to do. I know that when I catch myself wanting to be controlling and do things the way I think they should be done, I know that I'm not going to do a 10th step. I'm going to do a 3rd step. And remember, thy will, not my will. Okay? So the steps are always going to be there. But having the knowledge and the experience of what I've got and the benefit from working them set, see, and after I've been around a while, I would hope that I have enough common sense to know, man, what step do I need to do? You see, I need to write another inventory. I need to make an amends. You see? So, yeah, it's important. See, and I'm thankful stuff on that. Forgetting the gum thing. Jack has an excuse, man. He's a truck driver. Me, I'm just a burnout, man.
Okay, we've got just 2 more questions here. Do you do a formal, for example, a sit-down 10th step with a sponsee? What books do you use? Do you use the big book or the phone call?
Hey, this is what I got sober in. This is what I work out of. All right? It's pretty simple, man. This is what my sponsor sat down with me with. This is what we read together. Okay? Now, when working with a newcomer, you know, I've always tried to, in the past, sit down and read. Okay? And we talk about the steps. We read it together so we get an understanding. I think that's important, man. You know what I mean? So, working out of this book. Now, he's got this book. I don't know if he stole it from Pine or what, but it says Pine Recovery in it. It's for mine, so I know all about that. But same here, I got both of them with Pine Recovery on it. But going through the steps, look, I don't know anything about anything. Somebody had to teach me. Somebody had to walk me through, guide me through, explain to me. I didn't even know how to write my name when I was little, so I went to school and the teacher had to teach me my alphabet. When I learned my alphabet, I learned how to use vowels and make sounds and syllables. So I didn't know anything about recovery when I got here 23 years ago. But Dennis Ehoff drove down from Dayuba, he'd show up at Pine and Visalia, and we would sit down and we would read. And we would talk and we would read. And we never went on to one step until I had a clear understanding of the step that I was on. Pretty simple, you see. And that's what this whole thing is all set up for. And Webster's Dictionary defines the word sponsor as a person who's supportive. So the person who helps you. Okay? Okay, and that's what the sponsor did for me. He guided me through the steps. He walked me through what he was taught with the steps. And this is what I work out of. That's a good book. I read it because it has the idea and it has a more broad version of the steps and the traditions and points out things that this book doesn't. But this is what I've worked out of.
There's no formal papers or diagrams or anything that I work with my sponsees on the 10th step. Fact is, the only two times I have them right is they do a written first step and they do a written fourth step. And after that, everything's by word of mouth, sitting down, talking together to each other or over the phone. It's strictly out of our hearts, but by the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and to answer Albert's question, these books say the exact same thing on the front. It says, Jack R. Hildreth, 11 December 1990, Pine recovered. That's the day that I entered Pine from the VA hospital. And that's the day that I walked into the Alamo Club and bought both of these books and wrote the name on there for Pine Recovery, because my birthday is October 28, 1990, and my book's birthday is December 11th, 1990. No, I'm still in confinement. And don't say property of Pine Recovery Center. If I didn't have any money, I might have stolen some Pine. But the truth is, I was military and I got a paycheck to be in recovery. A lot of people don't have that opportunity, but I got a check every 2 weeks, about $300 or $400, so I had plenty of money to buy my own book or go get drunk if I wanted. What I did was bought a book that I work out of, like my sponsors work out of, and that I teach my sponsees to work out of. We work by the book, not on any forms. When they do their written first step and they do their written fourth step, they do it on their own blank paper. I don't have any special forms with questions for them to answer or anything else. That's just the way it is. That's the way I learned to do it, and that's the way I'm going to keep doing it.
Working out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. That's kind of how I finished.
I've worked out of the big book. I've worked out of How Al-Anon Works. I've worked out of Blueprint for Progress. The main book that I'm working on today is the Life Recovery Bible, in my personal recovery. I'm always looking for, I need to stay busy, so I'm always looking for something to work on to keep healthy. If I don't stay busy, I'm not healthy. And today my higher power through my recovery has taken me closer to Him, and for some strange reason, that's where He wants me to be. So whenever I work on something and I think I need to move on to something else, I always ask Him and He gives it to me. Or even if I'm not ready to work on something else, He always throws something at me. And whatever He throws at me, that's what's next. Different books work for different people. Like I mentioned earlier, I work with a lot of different people. I work with people that I apply my recovery experience to, who they don't even believe they have a problem. And once we meet for a few times, they realize that, hey, you know, maybe I'm not an alcoholic, maybe I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, maybe I've just been affected by the disease. But it's through communication that we come to that conclusion. Like I said, I work a lot of different programs and I apply a lot of different tools.
Okay, last question and we'll wrap up. How do you know when it's time for a sponsee to move from step 10 to 11? And what do you look for to indicate enough work or focus has been put on step 10 to move on?
I think that the person, that answer comes from within that person. It doesn't matter what step we're working on, as long as we know that, or we feel that we've
we've exhausted that step. I've exhausted my experience with that step. These sponsees exhausted these experience, then it's time to move on. But it all depends on that person, on what kind of pace, what kind of program he's experiencing. I always like to suggest to people, whether they're alcoholics, addicts, or someone who's been just affected by the disease, I always tell them all my experiences. Like, for example, when I came to the program, somebody suggested 90 meetings in 90 days, and I think I was doing more than that. But that was just me. That's how bad I wanted recovery. And I just throw it out there and just see what they want to do. Thanks.
Could you read the question again, please?
How do you know when someone's ready to go from step 10 to 11?
I get to know the people I sponsor, and if we speak weekly, while we're talking, usually her and I both know, like, stuff's building up, what's going on. And that's at a point where we can stop right there and do a 10th step. And I leave it up to them. And I feel like the women that I sponsor, we're pretty current with each other. And any part of getting to know somebody is I can tell when there's things building up because I know what that feels like. I know what it's like when things build up with me. And the things in my life that should not be my higher power become my higher power, like my job or a relationship or whatever it is. And it's easy for me to just hear it when we're sharing. And like I said before, it's always, they help me more than I help them. So that's it. But no, I don't think there's any formal time.
Shocker, shocker. The Big Book says it, I believe it, that settles it. 10, 11, and 12 work in conjunction with each other. One right after the other, right from the beginning to the end. They're the maintenance steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, always have been and always will be. When I started step 10, I started step 11, and I started step 12 at the same time. That's the way my sponsor did it, and that's the way I do my sponsors. Step 10, I take continuous personal inventory. In step 11, I seek my higher powers, will for me, and in step 12, I pass it on to others. They all work together. When you've completed the first 9 steps, the maintenance steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're ready to start that step 10, if you've done the first 9, you're ready to sponsor. That's what my alcoholic sponsors told me. The door's open. Recovery is in full bloom. And you're on your way. And so are we.
Also, I got to tell you, I'm going to ride on Jack's coattail because he hit it right on the money. Step 11, for those of you that don't know what it is, thoughts of prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. That's why I have to memorize the 3rd step prayer, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Okay? And not only do 10, 11, and 12 go right back to back, so do 5, 6, and 7. When you do your 5th step, 6, and 7, you do it all at the same time. Because if a person's going through something, you know, it's not one of them things, because as we all know, and Jack said it earlier, the Big Book says it, that a resentment is a dubious luxury that an alcoholic cannot afford to have. And I think Danny said it best when he said, he asked a question, he said, have you ever seen a speech freak in front of a mirror with a black-haired man? He said, you know, they would sit there and get the big teacher through an issue, man, in front of a mirror. You know what I mean? He said, and recovery is not about how deep you can get into an issue, because I can make things worse than it is. Because it's about how soon can you let go. And that's what I got to learn to do, is let go. I'm not going to let somebody sit there and wallow in their crap for a few days because they want to carry a resentment. Because that's not what the program's all about. And Jack's right on the money. See, when they do that force step and they brought up that list, the resentful act, the causing of the stuff, they both said it's 5, 6, and 7, bam, back to back. 10, 11, 12, bam, right back to back. You know, you can sit there and we can talk about what's going on. If you want to stay in the problem, but let's get into the solution. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve, you see, thy will, not my will. My will, I want to strangle you, man. You know what I mean? Thy will is, I got to love you. Yeah, let's talk about the problem. Let's talk about what's bothering you. Let's talk about why you're allowing this to have so much control or such a big effect on you. Let's do that 10 step. Well, let's end it with doing an 11. You want to sit there and wallow in your crap for a few weeks, go for it and be miserable and walk around with crap between your teeth. I'm not going to go for that, man. That's not what this program's about. It's about getting out of the problem and into the solution. And the problem with people like me, I like to stay in the problem. And I need people like Maytag, my sponsor, and people like Steve and Bill, who's responsible, to keep me into the solution.